Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 47. In this episode, we're going to be talking about K-State game. We're going to look around the Big 12. We're going to talk about the Olympics and what KU players would be in what sports. But first, I got to introduce my co-host, Andrew. How you doing, Andrew?
Doing pretty good, Kevin. It's episode 47. What's the number 47 in KU history? It'd be the 1947 Kansas Jayhawks football team, a team that went, 2-1-2, two ties, and went to the Orange Bowl. The Orange Bowl was in 1948, but we're going to consider this the 1947 team. If you will remember, we also went to the Orange Bowl in 1968 and 2008. That means that we are on track to go to the Orange Bowl in 2068. All right. So we have that to look forward to.
Over under BCS game, or not BCS game, but BCS equivalent game between now and 2068. You take the over 68 or under?
You know, as hard as it's been for KU fans, I'll probably take the under.
I will too.
On the 68. Maybe we're 19, still here. 28. I don't know. But there's just a big gap in between our big Orange Bowls. But anyway, that's our 1947. We did lose that game. Didn't really want to bring it up. Otherwise, I've been a little under the weather.
Yeah, sorry we're just not getting another podcast.
Got a cold. But the Jayhawks have also caught a bit of a cold.
Yeah, was it that game that got you sick?
Must have been that.
Yeah.
The Jayhawks were cold from the field in Manhattan on Monday. Let's do a little recap of this game. But first, before we do, let's talk about Johnny's. You want to tell me about Johnny's? So we're having a watch party at the Power and Light location next Tuesday. That's the 18th for the Texas Tech game. The game starts at 7 o'clock. But we'll probably be getting there, you know, earlier than that.
Probably like 2 in the afternoon, sitting at the bar.
$3.50 premium beers, dollar tacos, and 20% off all food if you mention the Jayhawk Talk podcast. So hell of a deal. We had a pretty good turnout last time. We're hoping to have quite a few people there for this one. I had a good time last time.
Yeah.
Good to meet some of the listeners and some of the Twitter folk that we've just interacted with on the tweeters, but it'll be fun. So Tuesday, come by. Everyone is very friendly. If you don't know anybody who's going, show up by yourself. Show up. Everybody's very friendly, and obviously we have a common interest, so we don't have to talk about the weather. I'm assuming everyone who's going to come is going to like dunks and half court shots, KU basketball. Not in any particular order.
How would you rank those?
Number one. I don't know. I love dunks, Kevin. But KU basketball, probably number one. So probably show up. We've got a Facebook invite. We'll be talking about that later. You don't have to be on that to show up. Just anybody can show up. So 6:30, 7 o'clock, Tuesday, Texas Tech, Power and Light, Johnny's.
Going to be a fun time. We should also mention that on this podcast, a good friend of KU, even Brian Haney, KU grad, now the voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders, joined me earlier today. I recorded this, so Andrew hasn't heard it yet, but it will be in this podcast as well. We talked about Marcus Smart. We talked about that Oklahoma State game, KU, Big 12, and of course the Red Raiders. So we'll patch that in a little bit here, but let's start with that K-State game. Even though I don't really want to. 85-82, overtime game. Storylines of the game, Andrew, there's a lot of them, but I think you got to start with just bad shooting, right?
Yeah, just terrible shooting. You know, we were 3-for-17 from three. I mean, I don't think we're a great three-point shooting team, but that definitely shows we're better than that. That's the lower end of where we're going to shoot all year. KU shot 8-for-15 from three.
K-State, you mean?
K-State shot 8-for-15 from three. And I think that it kind of comes from the post. You know, with Embiid in there, he changes the spacing on the floor. And with when they have to double team him and then we swing the ball around, our 3-point shots when he's in the game and dominant are more open. They're more accessible shots. So I think that really when you talk about playing inside out, it comes from the post. And he wasn't really healthy, didn't play a whole lot of minutes. And it kind of goes back to the beginning of the season when we were kind of, you know, bad from three. It's when, you know, Embiid wasn't that dominant presence. So, you know, that's kind of where I see this resulting from. And it being a hostile environment, just being a down shooting day. All that contributed to, you know, what was, you know, a miraculous get to overtime, but no dice from there.
Yeah, and it was funny, to begin the game, you could tell our guys were a little jacked up because every single three-point shot was banging off the back. I mean, they were long on all of them. So crowd probably had them just as jacked up as they had the K-State team. It showed a little bit. Another storyline, obviously you mentioned, is no Embiid for the most part in this game. He actually had a good start to the game. He had 5 quick rebounds, and then he didn't come back in. So that was certainly a missing piece in this game as well. And then also no Jamari. So that was interesting. So it was a lot of Perry. Perry played over 40 minutes, a lot of Tarik Black, a little bit of Landon Lucas, but that was just about it. So kind of an interesting front court. What was your thought on missing Jamari?
You know, you've heard some rumors about why he was suspended. I wish he would have been in there. Definitely, you know, he matches up well against tough interior defenders. You know, both sides, you know, offense and defense. So he would have matched up extremely well with the K-State guys, specifically Thomas Gibson. Like, him being in there, like, he can compete really well with Thomas Gibson. Similar type of player, but they're, you know, both very strong. He can compete on rebounds with Gibson. So I think it did hurt us. I'm not saying that we would have won the game with Jamari, but it would have been a little bit of a different game, especially trying to spell Embiid not being in the game. You know, it would have been a little bit different game. I'm not saying we would have won, but, you know, it would have been great to have him in there.
Yeah, you know, he's a faster player than Tarik Black. So a lot of those, you know, where they were going off the front and doing that ball screen and Tarik would get kind of jammed between two options. I think Jamari could have maybe defended that a little better. And obviously Embiid would have defended it a little better because he's a better rim protector. So yeah, we missed both of those guys. And that was certainly a big part of the game as well. No excuses though. Probably the biggest thing other than 3-point shooting was, one of our worst defensive games of the year. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
Yeah, it was disgusting. I mean, it was almost like we had never seen a ball screen before, the way that we were just getting schooled, especially at the top of the key. And that was what was so frustrating. You know, not having Embiid in there to once someone got past you, it was just like layups. I mean, it was too easy. And I think a little bit of that is on self. I mean, that's what was kind of frustrating to me. Like, it wasn't freshmen out there getting schooled. It was Perry Ellis and Nadir Tharp. These are guys that got to know better. Anyway, it was very frustrating from a defensive side. And I don't know. It's starting to become a little bit concerning if K-State can do that against us and be very, very successful. Yeah, it's a little worrisome going forward. I don't know about you.
You know, it's a little worrisome, but it definitely was one of our bad games. You know, Bill Self always says you're going to have 10 bad games, 10 great games, and then everything else is, you know, kind of who you are. This was definitely one of the bad games of the season. Sometimes you win those when you're KU, and sometimes you don't, you know, especially being on the road against a hostile environment. We definitely had one of our bad games, didn't have our full slate of players, and shot the ball pretty poorly. But, you know, I think there's some positives to take away from this. Brandon Green played well down the stretch. And you know what? We had no business being in that overtime. Like, the game was over, and we fought back in the last 2 minutes to get it tied up.
So let's talk about that overtime, though.
Yeah. Let's talk about, before we do that, the last play. Like, oh, yeah. Andrew Wiggins is better than anyone, I think, on the planet, and I would include NBA players in this, on his second jump.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is he can jump, and then when he lands, his immediate jump back up. Because what he did on that play, he missed that layup, or whatever you want to call it, and then was nearly out of bounds before he jumped back up again, you know, and put the ball in to send it to overtime. I don't think there's anyone else who can do that specific thing better. And so that was just an amazing play to get the game tied up. And you know, I think that there's a lot can be said about this team, you know, that they fought back to tie it up at the end, just couldn't pull it off in overtime.
So when that happened, when we got the game tied up, came back, epic collapse, the crowd has gone silent. Everyone, you know, all the energy is just sucked out of the building after being up by, you know, 9-10 points just a few minutes ago. What was your thought on who was going to win the game?
I thought it was over. I thought we had it.
Me too. And everything that we did to get to overtime, those last 2 minutes, where we were just pressing the issue and you know, attacking the basket and taking good shots and rebounding like crazy and guarding, it's like they forgot that that's what you needed to do to get back in the game in overtime. It's just, it all disappeared. It was really strange. And obviously we got off to a good start of overtime. We got a quick basket, but we let them score on every possession in overtime. I mean, it's like, you can't do that. You're not going to win. And I don't know. It was very frustrating. A couple careless turnovers and your boy Brandon Green had one there that was really costly. But yeah, I think it was surprising to me because I thought, like you, that we were going to win the game once we got it tied up, and that just clearly didn't happen.
I think you're right. You know, I thought we played fairly well in overtime, but...
Not defensively.
We got a little good bucket from Connor at the buzzer to... bring it to within three, but that wasn't quite enough. But let's talk about some stats real quick. As we mentioned before, we were 3-for-17 from three. K-State was 8-for-15. We out-rebounded K-State 43-32. You know, that's a typical KU line that we like to see, you know, when you look at the stat line and, you know, these are the types of numbers you need to win when you're playing in the Bill Self style. We only had 11 turnovers, so we're starting to cut that down. If the turnovers are down, rebounds are up, just got to get the shots to go in.
Yeah.
Is that the bottom line here?
Yeah, it was a weird game. I think you're right. There's some aberrations here between the shot, you know, going 3-for-17. And then also, obviously the defense was just so bad. And I think once we have a full complement of players, and hopefully that will happen soon, that's probably another story. But, if we have everybody on board, I think that this was a different, would have been a different game. So, I'm willing to kind of throw this one out. I'm not in love with the way that our veterans are playing defense, but I'm willing to throw it out as long as we respond here in the next couple of games. Let's talk some KU player stats. Ellis had a pretty good game, at least on the offensive side. He went 5-for-13 from the field, 9-of-12 from the free throw line, had 11 boards and 19 points. Wiggins, as we mentioned, 4-for-12. But only 8-of-15 from the free throw line. That was kind of strange for him. Even free throws weren't falling. 5 rebounds, 16 points for him. Tharp went 6-for-13 from the field, couple late baskets. He had 10 assists and only 3 turnovers. So you really like to see that kind of maybe a bright spot in the game, at least offensively, that a lot of people aren't talking about. And then Brandon Green ended up with 10 points off 4-for-4 from the free throw line. So who is your player of the game?
Here's the three. I'm telling you, he's in a zone right now.
I think you can put a blindfold on him.
I've got him on their feet here, Lawrence.
That's tough because we didn't win. You don't feel happy about anybody. I'm probably just going to say Brandon Green.
Really?
Because of his little Reggie Miller type play at the end. Like, it's just based on one play where he, you know, got the steal off the inbound and put it in to get it closer. You know, you need that. It's like that Sharon Collins steal that everyone kind of overlooks in the national championship game. If you're going to win, coming back like that, you're going to have to get one of those plays. And he's the guy who made that play. So for me, you know, choosing a player of the game in a loss, I'm going to pick out something like that. Give it to my boy, Brandon Green.
I'm going to go with Wiggins, mostly because I love that he shot 15 free throws. And that's something that he can do any game he wants. And I think he's starting to figure that out. Even though he only made 8 of them, which I think is uncharacteristic. Normally, you'd think he'd go like 11 or 12 of the 15. And next thing you know, he's got 20 points, and we're talking about that. So I think Wiggins played a pretty good game. Still want him to play better on the defensive end. He wasn't his normal self. Of course, no one was. So easy to give him a pass there since no one else was any good either. What about the WTF play of the game? I think there's several candidates here. There are plays or whatever you want to call the WTF player or play of the game. Seldon was non-existent again. 2 straight games, 1 of 6 from the field for 2 points. Anybody else jump out or any other plays?
I mean, I'm going to throw everybody in here. I'll say if it's just the WTF team. Of the game, we'll just call it the WTF of the game. Just general, I'd say our 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
The fact that we took that many is something. You know, if they're not going down, why keep trying at it? So the fact that we didn't make them and the fact that we kept taking them, that's my WTF of the game.
Fair enough. All right, now we got to talk about probably the most important award of the game, the floor burn segment.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
I think there's a couple candidates here, and I thought maybe the unsung hero of this game, though, was probably Connor Francamp. He played 15 minutes, 2 for 3 from three. Obviously, one of those was that late one, but he went 2 for 3 from three. No one else on the team. You take Connor out of the equation, we went 1 of 14 from three as a team. So he had 6 points, but more importantly, he had 0 turnovers. And I think this stigma about him that he can't play defense. I don't know.
Not like, true.
I think he's doing okay.
I think it was true in the beginning of the season, but I think he's definitely turned it up. You know, with this floor burn segment, I used to have a different criteria. You know, literally, I would look for someone who was diving on the floor and who got floor burns. But I've changed it in my head anyway. I can do whatever I want.
Sure.
And it's just like when someone does something that, you know, it's not going to get recognized in the player of the game segment.
Right.
I want to talk about Francamp getting that steal in the corner. Like he was just one-on-one with his man and just like, you know, when you're, I was the oldest brother, but when I was the oldest brother, my little brother would try to dribble and you just literally take it away from him. Like that's really what it was. You know, Francamp can play in this game because he can match up with Bradling and a couple other guys. Can't play he doesn't match up well against some other teams. So it's good to have him in there, get some experience in a big time game. And, you know, I thought he played pretty well. But I just like to say, for those people who are saying he can't play defense, I think he played pretty well. And look at that little steal he got. Maybe he can kind of turn into a little Aaron Kraft type of guy and get some steals and be that type of player down the road. But
yeah,
Connor Francamp, unsung hero.
I agree. And you and I had mentioned a couple podcasts ago, I think there was some question segment. I don't remember what it was, but it was something like, who do you want to see get more minutes? And we both said Connor Francamp kind of is just, I don't know, we had to choose somebody. But I still think that's true. I think he needs to play 15 minutes a game because I think when he's in there, he's a legitimate threat, obviously, from three. But he doesn't screw up. He's one of those glue guys. He's really turning into that. I mean, I don't want to like compare him to like a Brady Morningstar, but when he's in, the offense seems to be going a little better. And so that's, I don't know, something to watch for. I agree. You know, some of it's matchup based, but there's a lot of teams in the NCAA tournament that are going to be in the NCAA tournament that Connor Francamp can play against and match up well against. So it's something to look forward to, hopefully building for him to have a good postseason. Any other thoughts on this K-State game, or should we just forget about it?
Let's do it. Let's just do an overview. Let's just talk about this game. So K-State rushed the court.
Oh, gosh.
They do that every every couple of years. They're kind of like Halley's Comet, you know. They burn bright every 80 years, but the rest of the time they're nowhere to be seen. So they're the Halley's Comet of college basketball. You know, that was great for them, the rush to court. There was this article came out, and it was published by both the Lawrence Journal World and in the Capital Journal about how all the K-State players had seen the picture of Michael Beasley on the press box or on the press table. And, you know, what's the first thing that they do when they win the game is they run to jump on the press table. So it's more like they just wanted to do what Beasley did. It was fine.
Maybe the unsung hero of the game was Holly Rowe getting up on the table with them for a post-game interview.
Yeah, that was funny. but anyway, so let's talk about the t-shirt real quick. Have you seen t-shirt? So, of course, it's K-State. And, you know, we're uppity about this, but, you know, we've got our faults, too. Our football team is bad and blah, blah, blah. We recognize we're just being fans here. We're stating our side. But the t-shirt thing's pretty dumb, Kevin.
Yeah, you know, really? In our defense, we will rush the field and tear down goalposts against anybody.
That's our fault.
That's our thing.
We admit to our weaknesses here.
Right.
This is our weakness. We have a terrible football team, and we'll throw the goalposts at the drop of a hat.
Tell me this. So we beat K-State. Next time we play K-State at home, and we beat them, we tear down the goalposts. Everyone's really happy, whatever, we beat K-State. Tell me this. Is there any chance that you see a t-shirt the next day that says KU beat K-State in football?
Have we ever done t-shirts?
No, we don't make t-shirts. We make t-shirts for like things, like important things that happen. Not for one game. What?
The t-shirt thing's pretty dumb.
One game?
Pretty dumb.
I don't get it. I just don't
like it. It's like clockwork. I thought it would skip this year, but it was first thing I saw in the morning was, oh, here it is. T-shirt's been printed.
Yeah. I don't get
it. I wonder if they actually sell any of them.
I don't know. Probably not. And that's the thing. Like, who would buy a t-shirt that commemorates one game? Unless it's like you've never been to a game before. Like, here's the circumstance that you would have to buy that t-shirt. You've never been to a game before. You really, really like K-State. You have way too much money. So, like, the $23 that it's going to cost you to buy the t-shirt is whatever. $23 for a terrible t-shirt. You really hate KU, but you're not going to wear it anywhere near a KU fan because you'll get ridiculed. That's the person.
Yeah.
Like, you don't live anywhere in, you know, you live in Western Kansas or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, hats off to K-State. They got a good win, but just there's a lot of season to go.
Indeed. And we will certainly talk about the Big 12 standings and look at that stuff here in a little bit. But how about we get this interview with Brian in here, because it's a nice precursor to our talk about the Big 12, talk about Marcus Smart, talk about superfan Mr. Orr at Texas Tech. A very cool interview, so let's patch that in, and we will be back in just a minute.
Glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future
is all right. We are back, and we are joined by Brian Haney, a good friend of mine, native of Topeka, as am I. His course is a KU graduate, 2002, and broadcast management degree. Formerly, you might know him of the Rock Chalk Sports Talk program. He called KU women's basketball games. He called KU baseball games. And now he is the voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Brian, how you doing?
Kevin, great to be on with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we've been talking about trying to get you on, and gosh darn it, KU just doesn't play Texas Tech this year, apparently.
Not so real late, huh? February 18th, and then a quick turnaround for the March 5th game on senior night. I know Tech would like a reprieve from having to play at Allen Fieldhouse on senior night when it seems like KU's especially juiced. I know it's maybe not the same senior class this year with Justin Wesley compared to last season. But, yeah, excited to be coming back home here in a few weeks, and certainly excited to see friends and familiar faces coming down here on the 18th.
Absolutely. Well, I got to ask you, how has the transition been from Lawrence to the voice of the Texas Tech Red Raiders?
you know, it's been great to stay in conference because you already have a lot of contacts and friends across the region, and getting three or four built-in trips home every year as part of the basketball and baseball schedules and football too has been terrific to get to stay close to home in that regard. To be honest with you, there's a little bit of, you know, on occasion folks wondering now, are you really pulling for KU? You spent all those years up there, you're a Jayhawk grad and all that. But I think by my second season down here, I've won most of those folks over, and they realize that I really care about these Red Raiders. I'm excited to have a chance to see what Tubby Smith is doing with this team and chronicle the turnaround that he's orchestrated here. And I think that's been so cool from a play-by-play guy's perspective. My first season, we were losing games in league play by 28, 32, 33, 26-point margins. And those games just flat out aren't fun to call. But Tubby right. Smith has trimmed 16 points off the average loss margin, and already more league wins this season than they had in all of last season in Big 12 play, including two top 25 upsets that led to court stormings there at United Spirit Arena. It's just been a ton of fun in that regard. Plus, he's a first-class guy to work with. So very blessed to be in Lubbock and to be working with Coach Smith.
Well, you obviously must be reading my rundown here, because my next question was, what has been the biggest difference with Tubby coming in from this year to last year? I guess you do have that, you know, up close and front center seat out of that turnaround. So what do you think the deal is? Just he just knows what he's doing?
He absolutely does. I think as a tactical in-game manager, X's and O's wise, switching up the defenses, switching up the strategy, you just have so much more of that with a savvy veteran head coach, a guy that's won almost 525 career games now. So, you know, we take the Oklahoma State game as an example from Saturday night. They wind up taking the air out of the ball, which, you know, maybe isn't the style of play that every college basketball fan would want to see. But they looked at it, realized Oklahoma State averages about 85 points per game, second only to Iowa State coming into that game. We want to shorten the game as much as possible, so let's pass it around the perimeter until you get inside 10 seconds and then start to attack. And sure, that's a fundamental elementary theory, but it was actually something that worked, because you hold them to a season low 61 points. You know, he's switched defenses at key times. He's got the right matchups he's wanted. Stuff like that within the game that just squeezes every drop of blood out of that turnip possible, squeezes every ounce of potential out of a team that doesn't have a very big margin for error. To call it like it is, he's come a long way with these kids as individuals, and the individual player development and improvement is remarkable. But at the end of the day, there's still a lot of teams that are significantly more talented, and you know, they've had to make do with what they had. But the one thing that Tech does have that he inherited was a quality and a quantity of bigs.
Yeah.
It does compare favorably with some of the other teams in this league, and they've been able to win points in the paint, win the battle on the glass, that sort of thing. And the guard play has come along slowly but gotten better steadily here, and that's been a big reason why we've seen them finally start to win some of these games that they were blowing early in the season. Because as I'm sure you saw, you know, before Texas got hot and won seven in a row, Tech led by one inside 30 seconds to go in Austin. You know, before West Virginia was getting hot and now on the NCAA tournament bubble, Tech was up three inside the final minute versus the Mountaineers and lost in overtime. And
right.
When you go back and look at some of those narrow defeats, you think about what this season really could have been had they figured out how to close earlier in the year.
Well, as you mentioned, yeah, so 0-3 to start the Big 12 season, but they've since won 4 of 7, including, you mentioned, two top 25 victories, Baylor and course, the Oklahoma State game that no one probably watched or heard anything about. I don't know. So you were there, obviously, the Oklahoma State game. Where were you sitting? Did you have a vantage point of the end of game antics?
Yeah, I can give you quite a bit on this, actually.
Great.
I didn't get to see it happen live because it was right behind the goal structure
basket,
there.
Yeah.
My vantage point was blocked off, but I sit right next to the replay monitor. And so as soon as it happened, they go to the monitor, and it's right next to me, and I knew instantaneously who the fan was.
Of course.
Because, as you found out by now, Jeff Orr labeled the super fan and all that. This guy's literally everywhere we go. We went to Tuscaloosa this year to play at Alabama and see Travis Rutherford's little brother, Trevor. Uh-huh. There he was, first face we see when you get off the bus. When we head up to Brooklyn to go play in New York City and just down the road from it, there he is. He makes the trek. He travels over 28,000 miles a year to go to every possible game he can. He lives in Waco, which is a 700-mile round trip from Waco to Lubbock to see home games. Okay, so there's only really one game all year that's in his backyard. He goes everywhere else. And, and while certainly there are a couple of occasions now with documented examples of him being over the top, the other from 2010 versus Texas A&M with kind of an up yours hand.
Right.
You know, my impression of him in the year and a half I've been down here has been nothing but positive. I've seen the way the players appreciate how much, you know, he's there to support them and the links with which he goes to be there. I've seen the coaching staff. Even on one occasion, they included him on a pregame meal because they'd ordered too much food and they knew he was in the building. And, you know, Tubby took time, and while his food was getting cold, Coach Smith's food, to go find him in the hotel and invite Jeff and his wife back to make sure no food went to waste. And, that's the type of respect they have for him. And yet I think, obviously, in the wake of this, nobody condones saying that to a player. Nobody wants to see any type of uproar like this. And it's cast a really negative shadow on the Texas Tech fan base in general. But having said that, just based solely on my interactions with him, I've seen him be nothing but a positive guy to our team. And for people to infer that he might have said, go back to Africa, I thought that was ridiculous because, A, I don't think there's anything inherently racist about him. But, B, we have an African-born player on our team, Kadir Tafsoba, out of Burkina Faso, and I see Jeff give him fist bumps before every game. So it really was disturbing and disappointing to see the way that story morphed in a matter of minutes after the game, and even some national media folks piling on via social media that really didn't have a handle on what the true situation was. And it's also a shame that even after Sunday night's apology from Smart, the videotape that they got from the GoPro cam underneath the goal and the statement from Jeff Orr, coupled with the fact that Tech interviewed all kinds of folks that were in that section around him and did a very thorough investigation to get anybody's opinion that might have a take contrary to what the videotape showed. And everything came back with exactly what they reported, that it was piece of crap and not any racial slur. It's so disappointing, though, Kevin, that that wasn't enough to put it to bed. And there are still those, some folks in the national media even, that think there's more to the story that we're not hearing. And here we are several days later, and it's still being brought up and this particular person's name being dragged through the mud. So this is what it's feeling. And it won't go to bed, honestly, Kevin, until after Smart comes back from his three-game ban. And as you know, the first game back from that is Texas Tech in Stillwater. And
ESPN's
already ordering up extra sideline reporters and extra media coverage for that game. And so this whole thing's going to be strung out until that game's behind us in about a week and a half.
Yeah, I bet. That's going to be interesting. I do know one thing, that every single arena that Marcus Smart goes to for the rest of his life, there's going to be somebody that has a sign that says, "You're a piece of crap." I can absolutely guarantee that.
Probably true.
But, it was an interesting story. You know, I don't know where I fall on it. You know, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I agree. I think every piece of evidence shows that he didn't call him anything other than a piece of crap, but he still called him a piece of crap, and whatever you think of that, you know, whatever. You hear worse at every game. It's kind of one of those things, but we've seen Marcus Smart be a little over the top himself in many circumstances, and continues to grow. So I'm not sure anybody could disagree with what you've said on this podcast, and I'm kind of falling with you there. So we've obviously seen tonight you guys are playing at Iowa State, correct?
Is this going to air on Wednesday? We're at Oklahoma.
Or Oklahoma, and, I'm sorry.
Iowa State comes up on Saturday.
Saturday. All right. Yeah, I just wrote that. Sorry, I'm an idiot. Okay, so there's actually two games between us, or those two games, and KU, which will be next Tuesday. So I know it's obviously a ways away, but I'm sure you're keeping up with KU a little bit. What do you think about that matchup?
Well, I'm really interested to see how healthy Joel Embiid is, and obviously we're waiting to see how much he can play versus TCU and what Coach Self meant after Monday's game about necessary rest, because obviously even with Tech having one of the stronger front lines within this league and a seven-footer and Deion Kravitz, there are athleticism disparities there that are going to be a huge challenge, you know, for the Red Raiders to contend with, and obviously with Wiggins and all of that. So it'll be really interesting to see how effective Embiid can be, because obviously if he's at his normal level, I think Kansas wins that game on Monday night in Manhattan. And, you know, we're talking about a Kansas team with just one blemish on its Big 12 resume sitting there at 10-1. But I think for Texas Tech, obviously Nadir Tharp's going to be a little bit of a matchup problem. The Red Raiders have struggled against good point guards that are explosive off the dribble and can also score. And Tharp's really impressed me. I don't know about you, Kevin, but he's blown away every expectation I had for him going back to the first half of last season, where I thought he was going to wind up just based on the opening months of that part of the year, and to see how confident and assertive he is now is really remarkable. So Rob Turner will have to really try and stay in front of him. And the problem is, if he gets by you and kicks to the wing, you've got capable 3-point threats around the perimeter as well. That's been one area of concern for Texas Tech. They're second to last in the league in perimeter defense in terms of 3-point percentage defense. They're a good rebounding team, are the Red Raiders. They're also a team that's, after Jay Crockett, has a couple of other viable options that can score, but they don't necessarily have the scoring balance that you see with some of these other top end of the conference teams, like Oklahoma, for example, who has all five starters averaging in double figures. And so, from a Kansas perspective against Texas Tech, they'll really want to lock in on Jay Crockett, who's really been coming on and is one of the better all-around ambassadors for Big 12, who's just a terrific kid. Chew this on this for a second, Kevin. 5 years he's been at Texas Tech. In the last 4 years, he's played for four different head coaches, and he stayed through all of that.
That's incredible.
It's just the consummate pro on the college level in terms of saying the right thing, leading by example, all of that. And now he's turning in some of the best basketball of his career when it matters most. Just went for 21-12 versus Oklahoma State. So he'll be clearly public enemy number one in terms of what the Jayhawks will defend on that night. And then past that, Dusty Hanna's an outstanding 3-point threat who hit 7 3-pointers at West Virginia. Set the Big 12 record, in fact, for most threes without a miss in a game in Big 12 history. Huh. So that's another guy that the fan base would want to familiarize themselves with from a Texas Tech perspective.
Very good. Well, it has been interesting to watch Tubby down there. It's tough in the Big 12. You look around, you see all these coaches that kind of jump out, obviously Bill Self, and now we got Lon Kruger, and now we got Tubby Smith, and we got all these, and Bruce Weber coming in, and guys that you've seen at other programs and big name coaches coming into the Big 12 and getting second and third chances and really capitalizing on them. It's a tough league, at least from the coaching standpoint. That's just starting with the coaches and then obviously seeing the players too.
Yeah, all the Final Four experience these guys bring to the table. And certainly when you've got coaches like Tubby Smith and Bob Huggins and Rick Barnes that were picked at the bottom of the league in the preseason, we shouldn't be surprised that the bottom has had an uprising,
right?
And that even the ninth place team or the eighth place team could beat you on any given night. And I think TCU will get better under Trent Johnson. They've had obviously all kinds of injuries. They've got more talent sitting on their bench waiting to get eligible for next season than they have on the floor right now. But of those first nine teams, especially on the road, on any given night, one of those teams like a West Virginia and Morgantown or K-State, who's now in the upper half of the league, but you've seen how tough it is to win at Bramlage Coliseum, and Texas Tech would like to join that argument as well. It's a really tough team to go get in their house, and it speaks to the great leadership on the sidelines and the talent top to bottom in this league that has been so competitive. I'm just waiting to see if, from an overall conference reputation standpoint, if we can truly get that second team to stand up and emerge next to Kansas as kind of a dance partner of a frontline, upper echelon national team. Because here's Iowa State, the highest ranked team behind Kansas in terms of the top 25, and they just get boat raced the other night by 25 points or 27 points, whatever it was, in Morgantown. And you look at them currently, and they're sitting there in the middle of the pack in the Big 12 conference standings right now. They're actually all the way down at sixth, and they're the second highest ranked team. Texas, might be that team that's most likely to join Kansas as the second national power. But then again, you saw the way they performed at Kansas State over the weekend before a really convincing win last night. And so is the middle of this conference being so strong, is that keeping the conference from having a couple of stronger flag carriers in terms of like national prominence? I ran the numbers on Joe Lenardi's bracketology a week ago, and you had at the time the Big 12, along with three other major conferences, all getting six teams in. But the average seed of the Big 12 was just under a six seed, because you have Kansas, obviously, picked toward the top, but then a lot of sixes and eight and a nine, and it certainly brings that ranking back down in terms of the caliber of seed that you're getting in. So maybe we won't truly know how good this conference is until the tournament, which is always the best determiner anyway, when we see how deep some of these teams are able to make runs, because right now everybody's beating up on everybody.
Right.
And clearly Monday night was a bad night for the league. Sure, you can speak to the parity and how great that is, but if your top two highest ranked teams keep falling and suddenly nobody's in the top 10, I'm not sure that's the best thing necessarily for the league as a whole.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's, you know, obviously a testament to Kansas over this time. What they have over everybody else right now is just an incredible home court advantage. And when you start off 9-0 in the season at home, it makes that league race a lot easier, because you just got to go take a few on the road. And that's kind of one thing that I wanted to ask you about. What's the home court experience like at Texas Tech right now? And is it changing?
It is changing. It's a great question and a very timely one, Kevin. You know, it was a situation early in league play where they were struggling to get fans in there. There was the West Virginia game I mentioned where they lost a 3-point lead inside the last minute of regulation, and that happened to coincide with the national championship game of college football on a Monday night. Students weren't back yet. Crowd was announced at about 5,000, but realistically it was probably one or less in the building.
Wow.
And you can't tell me if they don't have a sixth man there, you know, home court advantage, they don't win that game in a one-possession game that goes to overtime. But they didn't have any kind of fans because the students weren't back and really wasn't the same buzz around the program. But they started winning a couple of these games. Marketing has reached out to the community, and so has the team. They've gone to all the elementary schools in town and helped get kids fired up about it. They're busting kids for FCA events and stuff like that. And suddenly, you know, Texas Tech right now, and I would anticipate this for the 18th, has a pretty electric fan base. It's gotten behind basketball, and it's a basketball town when they win. And we saw that when Bob Knight was here, and everybody mm-hmm. told me about how great the crowds could be when the team was relevant. And it was hard to imagine that based on what I'd seen over my first season and a half here. Sure enough, you get a couple of wins. And one thing that Tubby Smith did, he went out to the student union and he bought lunch for over 150 students and said, "Hey, come on out, support us. Here's a free hot dog on me." And guess what? It worked, you know, and money well spent in that regard, because they came up, they were loud, they were proud. And the other night, they had their first sellout in 7 years.
Right.
Capacity at the USA is 15,098, and it was a blackout game, so everybody's wearing black, they're rowdy. It was awesome, and I would anticipate a comparable atmosphere for the Kansas game. I know they still have about 1,500 or 2,000 seats still available. It is a weeknight, and one thing that people don't realize that live up north is that Texas Tech's alumni base and their fan base is from all parts around the area, not just in Lubbock, and the weeknight games, you have to drive 5 hours to come in from the Metroplex to Lubbock, or from Oklahoma City or Albuquerque or San Antonio to Lubbock. It's very isolated. And so for these weeknight games, they don't draw as well as they could because the alumni base can't get in and get back to work and all of that. So I'll be interested to see if the town of Lubbock, which is a community of about 240,000 people, shows up in droves. And then there's always the Western Kansas Jayhawk factor that migrates down because it's a closer drive, believe it or not, to Lubbock than it is to Lawrence for some of those folks in Southwest Kansas. But I would anticipate, quite honestly, something in the neighborhood of 12,500 or 13,000 strong when the Tuesday night's game rolls around with the Red Raiders and Jayhawks.
Well, that'll be fun. We're looking forward to that game, certainly, and looking forward to playing Texas Tech for the first time this year. I got to ask you before you get out of here, how's the golf game? You getting any time down there?
Not nearly as good as yours, my friend.
Oh, whatever.
I used to be a TCC, Topeka Country Club, bag boy back in the day, and got a chance to witness one of the sweeter swings in all of the capital city when Kevin would come up the 18th fairway. And his handicap was always around one or two, and my handicap was every part of my game. It was all broken. I was like an 18 plus. But you know what? Funniest story from our days meeting each other as high school kids in Topeka there. Dean Smith and Roy Williams came to play a round of golf at TCC once, and I got to clean both their sets of golf clubs and drive them to their cars, and I was just a pimply-faced 16-year-old kid back in 1996. And Dean tipped me $2 and Roy tipped me $5.
Uh-huh.
And my mom had them framed and they hang in my office to this day. But that and watching Kevin Meckley hit the golf ball was my two favorite memories from.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's funny. The only thing framed in my office, and you can vouch for this because no one believes me, is a scorecard where I beat Gary Woodland in a tournament.
Nice. How about that?
Nobody believes me. So will you vouch for me that I used to be good at golf?
Oh, you are still awesome at golf. This guy can stripe at 350 right now.
Oh, whatever. Get out of here. All right. Well, hey, man, we really appreciate you coming on. We've been talking about it for a long time. Very happy to get you on. Certainly, everyone will be happy to hear your voice again, being very obviously on the airwaves in Lawrence for a long time. We can still follow you at B Haney on Twitter. I saw you have a little website, brianhaney.com. What's going on there?
You know, it's more just game audio and blogs about how the Red Raiders are doing for basketball. But if you want to hear what some of the highlights sound like and scout the competition that way in anticipation of the game on the 18th, you can certainly log on there. It's more just about following the team and that sort of thing. But
right on.
Pointing that out.
Hey, man. Well, we really appreciate you. We'll certainly catch you when you get up here to Lawrence.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
All right,
pleasure.
Take care.
Say what? Dirty South. Here we go. Can y'all really feel me? Baby girl. East Coast feel me. West Coast feel me. Can you feel us? Dirty South. Dirty, dirty. Can y'all really feel me? Really. East Coast.
All right, we are back. Thanks again to Brian Haney for joining us. Very cool of him. He's actually in a hotel getting ready for the call tonight, which is about to start. So very cool. Thanks again to him. And anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about, I don't know, Andrew, this is your idea. I really want you to pitch it to me.
Sure. Okay. So when Aaron Rodgers was in town, he told Bill Self that Tarik Black should try to get a tryout in the NFL as a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Self said, no, he probably couldn't do that. But then he thought about it again. You know, maybe he could. So I thought that's, you know what? I'm a Jersey guy, right?
Sure.
But I'm not really a football Jersey guy. We've talked about this on the podcast before. I'm a basketball Jersey guy. I kind of like get my jersey for the year. But if Tarik Black played for the Browns, I would totally buy a Tarik Black tight end.
Heck yeah.
Browns jersey. But it got me thinking. Are there other players on the team who could play other sports?
Okay.
You know, if they weren't playing basketball, like what else could they do professionally? So I've got a couple ideas, and then I'm going to ask you. But I'm going to start off with Joel Embiid joining.
First of all, you're talking about after they get done playing basketball, like
right.
after college.
Or just of like, you know, an alternative sport that they could play in. Similar to like, oh, Jamari could be a tight end.
I have not really thought about these, so we're just, anything I say is going to be right off the top of my head.
I put literally 2 minutes before we started this
perfect
thought into it.
I like
this
it.
Is what I came up with so far, and then you can kind of chime in. Do you have a thought on Embiid? I'll start off with this. I think Joel Embiid should join the World Eating Championship and do the hot dog eating contest. The Nathan's famous July 4th hot dog eating contest. You hear these stories about him just cramming down food at different places in the union, the Verge Union, him cramming down food, cramming down cookies and ice cream. I think he'd be pretty good at it. You know, he looks pretty skinny, but I think he could put a lot of food into his body.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with Joel Embiid, hot dog eating contest, ice cream eating contest, the World Eating Championships or whatever, the World Eater League. They used to play it on ESPN. But
right.
I guarantee you, Kevin, if Joel Embiid joined the eating league, Major League Eating, it would be back on TV. It would take that sport,
sure,
you know, make it probably, you know, fifth favorite in the country.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't watch it still because it makes me sick. But
Joel Embiid, hot dog eating champion.
I don't know. I'd probably say big game hunting, like if I had to choose one, just because.
Oh, that's okay.
Like that's probably his forte.
With his bare hands, though.
Right, right. Like, yeah, no guns.
Like your bar game. It's like throwing spears or like fighting.
Exactly.
Fighting like he says he does. I like that. Okay, so I'm going to throw another one. Tyler Self.
Okay.
I'm going to say he should go and participate in the World Beard and Mustache Championship.
Is that a sport?
That is a sport. I will fight you to death regarding the definition of whether that's a sport or not. And I will say that is a sport. It requires physical activity in the sense that, you know, your beard and your mustache.
A lot of training
because, yeah, I've watched a little thing about it. These guys have to exercise and eat well in order for the beards to really look good because, you know, how healthy you are affects, you know, how your hair looks. So I think that Tyler Self needs to step up his game, though, because he's kind of weak right now.
Right.
But there's a couple categories he could enter for the mustache category.
Okay.
There's the natural mustache, the Dolly mustache, the Imperial mustache, Hungarian. I think he should do this category.
Are you reading these? Like, are you on like some website? Like
I just pulled it up. Yeah.
Okay.
This one.
It's like,
right
are
here.
You recalling all these mustaches?
No. I don't know that much about the World Beer Championship. Freestyle mustache. He should do freestyle because you know what? Yes. He's pretty creative. Yes. I think Tyler Self should shoot for trying to win the freestyle mustache championship next year in Carson City, Nevada.
There you go. All right. Well, it's got to be a sport. It's in Nevada. Let's see. What would I do for him? I would probably say he needs to be a jockey, like a horse racing jockey.
You know, he's not that little.
That's what
he's
I'm saying.
He's just little
compared to everyone else.
I know. He's actually a pretty tall guy. He just looks little compared to everyone. Like, those jockeys have to be.
I'm looking from the 30th row. He looks like a jockey. That's what he is.
Okay.
All right, who you got?
Next one, Jamari Traylor, arm wrestling. Hands down, arm wrestling champ.
Yeah, he'd be good.
Seen that movie Over the Top? If they ever did a remake of the movie Over the Top, Jamari Traylor should at least get a supporting role.
I like that.
You know, like one of the guys that beats him early on to, you know, convince him. Maybe he should get the starring role.
Right.
Arm wrestling, Jamari Traylor. We talked about earlier.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, he could do surfing as well because his arms are so long that it would be cool to see him on a surfboard with his arms balancing him out because they're enormous.
I don't know why, but I really want him to be a Formula One racer.
Okay, explain.
I just think he'd look funny in a Formula One car, and that's really the only reason. And I think he'd be good at it because he likes to race, in my mind.
In this fictional world that you've built for Jamari Traylor,
he likes to race things.
Okay. He's a race car driver. Okay.
That's the end of that. Yeah. Formula
Perry one. Ellis, this is obvious. The obvious one for him is Major League Gaming.
Major League Gaming. I was going to say professional bowler just because he kind of looks like one.
We've heard stories about Perry playing Halo all the time.
He loves that.
So I think this isn't trying to be funny. I think he could do pretty well.
Yeah, like what was that movie? What was the movie with the gamer who played the Nintendo wizard? Something, you know what I'm talking about? Someone out there knows what I'm talking about. A child of the 80s. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from that.
Okay. So if you have any ideas, send them.
I got a couple.
Go ahead.
While we were talking about this, I just came up with a few more. I think Wesley would be really good at billiards, in my mind.
Ooh, because that wouldn't even be fair.
Yeah. He just looks like he'd be a hustler in the billiards.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be fair. They all have long arms, but he could just, you know, whereas I'm trying to like put my foot on the ground and, you know, try to put it in. He could just with almost one hand it.
I think that Wayne Seldon would be really good at bull riding.
Okay. Just in your head.
Yeah. I think he would like tell the bull who's in charge.
He could hang on for 8 seconds. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think, how about, here's one. Andrew White III, fencing, obviously.
Obviously. That's the most obvious one on the board.
It is. Yeah. The one that's most obvious, we'll close with this one. Hunter Mickelson.
Golf. Peasant hunting. Golf.
Hunter Mickelson.
So Hunter Mahan, Phil Mickelson. I did not.
Golf.
Make that connection.
He has the most golf name of anybody on the team.
He's got the most American golf name for it.
Uh-huh. Hunter Mickelson. Hunter professional Mickelson. Golfer.
I got Hunter Mahan, Phil Mickelson. Put them together. If you they had a man baby, it would be Hunter Mickelson.
All right. Well, yeah.
So, I mean, guys, if the basketball doesn't work out for you, I know you're listening to this.
Right.
Here's some suggestions from us.
Just a few thoughts. Okay, so Andrew, we are now tight in a Big 12 race with the Texas Longhorns just biting at our heels one game back. What do you say we talk about the Big 12 conference?
Y'all ready for this? Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
BCS.
Dollar signs.
All right, so let's talk about the standings just to get it out of the way. KU's now 9-2, Texas 8-3. Oklahoma and K-State are both up to 7-4. West Virginia 7-5. Iowa State is in the positive column at 6-5 now. Tech 4-6. Oklahoma State 4-7, Baylor 2-8, and TCU 0-10. First off, right now, if the season ended today, how many teams would be in the NCAA tournament and who?
I think 5.
Who you got? And what's their seed?
Okay, KU, I think, is a 2. Texas is a 4. Iowa State's a 4. Oklahoma's a 6. K-State's an 8.
Okay.
I'm just making that up. I don't know.
So who's on the outside looking in then?
West Virginia, like, I think they're creeping up. They could make the tournament. I think they can make some noise, which is, you know, not even fathomable 3 weeks ago. No one was even giving them any attention, but, you know, I think that they're going to be up there. And that excludes Baylor and Oklahoma State.
Right.
I don't think Oklahoma State's done enough to get in right now. I think that they will eventually get in, but a 4-7 record in the Big 12 right now, not impressive. The only good win they have in the non-conference is against Memphis, who, you know, beat them less than 2 weeks later.
Right.
They've got, you know, 4 wins in the Big 12. Just not. They've got to do some work. I think they're going to get in and they can do it, but 2 more games without Marcus Smart, they've got to do something.
We'll talk about Marcus Smart in a little bit for the water cooler conversation, but it does feel like when he comes back, he's going to lead them to like 4 or 5 victories in a row. It's going to be in a comeback story and all this BS. I think you're right. I think there's a chance that they still make a run. Anyway, it's kind of setting up that way to me.
So let's just give me your quick power ranking. So let's just kind of get the top ones. Easy ones out of the way. You KU, Texas.
I think so.
Then what?
It's just so weird but it's true. It's KU, Texas. I think Oklahoma I like a little better than K-State still. I think that's probably changed for a lot of people after K-State's week, but I still like OU a little better. I think I still have Iowa State ahead of West Virginia, so I'll go ISU, West Virginia. And then I've got Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU. What do you think of that?
Poor Baylor.
Poor Baylor. Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Okay, so let's go to the predictions for this week. Baylor at TCU.
Baylor.
Did you predict this one as being a TCU win?
Oh, actually, I did, I think. I think I did. Okay, so TCU.
You got to stick to your guns there.
Horned
okay.
Frogs.
Texas Tech at OU.
Is that today? Is that tonight? Is that game tonight?
Anyway. I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think it is. Yes, it is.
What's the score?
I don't know. It's just, right. It just started. It started at 7.
Okay. Sorry.
What are we at here?
Tech at Oklahoma.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What's your pick?
Oklahoma. What about you?
Oklahoma.
Okay.
I'm looking at your thing here. Is it supposed to be Texas Tech at Iowa State? Is that this weekend?
Yep.
Okay, so Texas Tech at Iowa State.
Yeah, because the Tech OU game is going on right now too. That's where Brian was. At Iowa State, I'm going to take Iowa State.
Okay, me too. OU at OSU.
Should be interesting.
Bedlam Part 2. No Marcus Smart.
Oklahoma. I'm taking them.
You have to.
I think you have to. I wonder what the line will be in that game. That's the interesting part. After this blowout Texas Oklahoma State game.
Maybe Oklahoma State's a good bet. You know,
probably being
a home dog. So TCU at KU, we will talk about, but you probably know our picks. K-State at Baylor. That's a tough game.
Yeah,
both ways. Can Baylor get a win?
I think Baylor does. And I don't know why. I just think that they're one of those teams that out of nowhere is going to crush somebody. And that feels like one of those games that could happen. Like Baylor's going to beat a good team by 15 points at some point in this season. I'm picking this to be that time. What about you? Who do you got there?
I think I'm going to go Baylor.
Really? Okay.
They've got to get a home win.
Is it just you just feel like they have to win at some point?
Yeah,
is that why you're picking it?
I hate Baylor, but it feels like I've been their most vocal supporter.
You have.
Or just like saying they should be good, but
right.
They're not.
They're just not.
All right, moving on. West Virginia at Texas.
Texas.
Me too. Oklahoma State at...
Although I think that'll be a really good game. That West Virginia-Texas game. I think that'll be a really good game. I think they can score with Texas.
Yeah, West Virginia's very surprising. Like we should talk a little about them more. Well, we're going to be playing them in Morgantown coming up, so we'll probably talk about them. Oklahoma State at Baylor. This is next week. What do you think?
This is another one. Baylor could come back. They got a chance.
Oklahoma State's got to get that win.
But I'm going to say Oklahoma State.
Yeah, me too. Texas at Iowa State. That's the game I'm on.
Game of the week.
Yeah. I think that's on at the same time as our game.
Game of the week. I'm going to go with Iowa State here, and it's probably wishful thinking, but I think that they will win that game.
Me too, and KU at Texas Tech. Next Tuesday, 7
Watch
o'clock.
Party.
Watch party. P&L location. Power and Light, downtown Kansas City. Come and see us. But let's
Real
move
quick,
on.
Andrew.
Sure.
So Texas is a game back, and I think there's some concern among KU fans. Okay, you know, we could lose another one here somewhere. Next thing you know, this is starting to become a pretty good race. I think KU's still in the driver's seat, obviously, being up one game. But I wanted to let people know what Texas's remaining schedule is, so we can just kind of show, maybe do a quick rundown of what we think is going to happen for their schedule the rest of the way. So at Iowa State, you and I just said that they would lose that, and then they play at Kansas. So if they lose both of those games, they're 8-5, and they're probably out of it. So the next two games are huge for Texas. Actually, you can really say the next four, because it's at Iowa State, at KU, Baylor at home, and at Oklahoma. So if they lose, if they go 3-1 in that stretch, I think that there's a very good chance that there's, maybe we could split a title with them. But if they lose two or three of those games, I think KU is back in the front seat. What about you?
Definitely something to keep an eye on, but this is a tougher stretch for Texas. You know, obviously, from a KU perspective, the game you got to keep your eye on is when Texas comes to town in two Saturdays.
Got to beat them.
Yep. So just if you beat them there, it's a little easier sailing. So
yep.
Got to get some revenge. Got to figure out how to beat this team. Play better at home. That's the game you got to target. If you want to win the league, you want to win it outright. That's the game you target.
Got to beat them. Okay, I think that we probably ought to talk about this subject. It's been talked about a lot, and people might be sick of it, but you and I have it on the podcast, so let's talk some water cooler conversation real quick.
Water cooler conversation.
Has Marcus Smart lost his goddamn mind?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he has too.
Yeah.
There's
been so many ways to talk about this. Like, did you have an idea of like how you wanted to? Because I don't think you and I have really had a conversation about it.
We have not. With some text messages, with exclamation marks.
So I happen to be see, this is dangerous territory. I happen to just be watching this game because
I is too.
Kind of a basketball nerd.
On a Saturday night or whatever.
Saturday night at 10 o'clock. I wasn't out. I was. My defense, I was a little sick.
I was at Johnny's.
Okay, I was by myself watching this game at 10 o'clock on Saturday. So like, I know it's sad, but that's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to watch that. Oklahoma.
Not sad.
That game. Happened to be a rowdy game, so I was watching it live. And I was kind of excited that Texas Tech was going to win. So I was, yeah, this is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And then the storm happened. The hurricane, the nuclear bomb. The push seen, heard around the world. Mark Smart tracks the guy down, fouls the guy on the fast break, goes into the crowd, and then pops up, looks at a guy, goes over to him and pushes him. I'm sure you've all seen the footage.
Right.
I think because everything's been said, I'm just going to take a couple things about what hasn't been said that I think should be said.
Okay.
Marcus Smart cost his team a shot to win the game.
Yeah, he definitely did that.
Because the technical, let's just assume what happened was is that the technical foul doesn't happen, and then the Texas Tech player makes one of two free throws. That means Oklahoma State is down three
with the ball.
With under 10 seconds, but enough time to get up a three to tie. So, that no one's talking about that angle. Sure, it was disrespectful and blah, blah, blah. You can't go. But, if he's a competitor, he's got to know better. He's got to know how to get his team to win. He lost that game for them. He took them out of contention to have a possibility of winning that game by doing that one thing. That's one thing you can point to
right
at the end of the game. So, I mean, they point to him as this big competitor, but, you know, you can't really say that anymore with that being out there. I mean, that was that one single act prevented them from having a chance to win the game.
Not to mention him not being there the next three games, which obviously is going to take them out of consideration to win those games too.
Right. And, you know, that's something that you're not thinking about sure. at the time. But at the time, you're certainly thinking about, you know, how am I going to win this game?
He potentially cost his team four games, though. I mean, truly.
Right.
Potentially.
And so for someone who's portrayed as this big competitor and would do anything for his team, you know, I'm not so sure that's true.
And I don't want to be the guy that rains down on Marcus Smart. And that's not my intention, because I think that's probably been done enough. Although I think he's being painted as more of, I don't know, the one that's probably been hurt by this. I think Travis Ford has probably taken the brunt of it.
I think you're right. I think before this, was there ever the talk about, oh, Travis Ford on the hot seat? After this, it's kind of creeping up.
Yeah, and I think that story is a little weak to me, too. That was like the sports writer thing, like the day after. Because everyone had to write something that night. You know, everyone had to write the story about Marcus Smart going into the crowd. And then the next day, the next news cycle, we have to analyze it. We have to figure out what to say then. And what they decided to say, a lot of them, DeCourcy and Dana O'Neill and ESPN and some other folks, basically just went after Ford, saying that had, you know, Ford been there to be a father figure or been there to be a disciplinarian, he never would have been able to do that or whatever. And I just thought that was such a lazy, I don't, just me, because we don't know what goes on there and they don't know what goes on there. And, you know, for all we know, maybe Ford behind the scenes is, you know, is mean to him or whatever, not mean to him, but like, you know, takes him, puts his arm around him and talks about it. So I just think it was kind of lazy. But, you know, at the same time, would he be doing that if he played for Bill Self? Would he be doing that if he played for Rick Barnes? I don't know. I don't know. And I think that's the thing that you take away. I don't know. I don't think they know either.
It definitely changes kind of how you view him in terms of the draft. You know, should he have stayed?
No. God, no. We ridiculed him then.
You know,
I don't get it.
In a different world, in a, you know, alternate universe, he is, instead of, you know, spending this weekend at home suspended from the team, he is at All-Star Weekend.
Right.
In a rookie challenge.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Rookie sophomore challenge. In an alternate world, that's where he is.
And probably in contention for rookie of the year because nobody else is.
I mean, right. And I don't know if he's going to be that good of an NBA player. But
well, no. I mean, I'm just talking about this class. His class this year, had he come out, I mean, he wouldn't be that good. I mean, he would be among the best in that class, no matter where he landed. And that's, I don't know. I think that more than anything, I think you and I railed on Travis Ford last year because it was more like, God, you got to tell this kid to go. I mean, you got to put your arm around him like Bill Self does and say, hey, you know, Julian, you're going to be a lottery pick. I know, whatever, you got to go. And I think he'll do the same for Embiid. Now, whether Embiid stays or goes or whatever, that could be a different story. But anyway, I was somewhat appalled by the storyline. I was really appalled by the fact that everyone immediately jumped to race as the reason that he would jump up and do that. He kicked the shit out of a chair like two games before that for no reason whatsoever other than he wasn't getting calls or playing bad or whatever. The next game, he got on the phone with Jeff Goodman and said, everyone's out to get me and the refs are out to get me and blah, 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 blah. Like, this was building. I don't care if the guy said that, you know, hey, you suck at basketball or hey, you should go back to Texas or go back to Oklahoma or hey, I don't like you very much. I don't think it would have mattered what he said. I think he was ready to blow. And
so where do you come down on the fan? Like, you talk to Brian about Jeff Orr, but what's your thoughts on it?
Well, my opinion changes a little bit after talking to Brian. I think most people, if you made it to this point in the podcast, probably are thinking a little bit of that too. But I mean, the guy's obviously a crazy fan, and fans short for fanatic. And you and I have been on the front row of a KU basketball game before, as a student or whatever, yelling it at other players. And maybe there's a difference between being a student and being a grown ass man yelling at a player, but I don't know. Heat of the moment, and the guy's jumping in front of you and it's Marcus Smart, I don't know that I wouldn't have said, you know, I wouldn't, I obviously wouldn't have called him a name, but I've been like, I might've been like, yeah, or, you know, something, or I don't know. I probably wouldn't call him a name, but you know what I mean? I might've reacted to it. And I think a lot of people would, not necessarily directed to the player, but just a reaction and his immediate jump up and pushing the guy. I don't know. I think there's probably some blame to go on both sides, but I don't know. I think a lot of people, the storyline is now fans are getting too close to the court and fans think they have a right to this and a right to that. I don't know if I'm that far on that side, but what about you?
I don't know. My dad was telling me a story about when he used to go to college at the University of Wyoming. They sat right behind the opposing team's bench. Yeah. Opposing team's bench. So I'm not sure if the whole, like, oh, in the past 10 years, they've gotten closer and closer. You know, at Allen Fieldhouse, they're further than they were before. Yeah,
they've moved back.
they've moved back. Some of these other places, you don't see student sections right behind opposing benches anymore. So I don't think that that's true.
There's some. There's some schools, but yeah.
Of the things said in a typical basketball game, piece of crap is probably the tamest thing that's said.
No kidding.
So I don't know. Should he have said it? No.
Probably not.
But yeah, it was a time bomb.
Yeah, I think that was more than anything exactly what it was. And it blew up, and maybe it needed to happen. Maybe it's good for the kid. Maybe he'll, because he is a kid, he's 19. Maybe he'll learn from this, and maybe he needed the suspension and cost him his team to really get it through his head that he's got to change the way he plays a little bit. Got to change the mental side of the game, because that's obviously just as much important as your athleticism. It's your mental approach. So anyway, let's move on. Anything else to say there before I guess we move on? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I mean, I like Marcus Smart in terms of, I think he's a great player. He does a lot for his team. And if he played for KU, I think I'd love him. But, you know, he's kind of the villain of the Big 12 right now. And, you know, you can learn to appreciate a villain, if that makes sense. So I think he'll do well in the NBA and it'd be a steal for anybody. But, man, that guy's got to get his act together.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're going to be playing the NIT.
Yeah. I mean, right now they certainly are. And they're going to – not only are they going to probably play in the NIT, like they really need to make a run to not play in the NIT. They need to close really hard. And here's the thing, though. I think it's setting up perfect for him. They lose 2 or 3 or whatever while he's gone. He comes back and they rattle off a few wins. They could beat KU. I mean, they certainly could down there. And next thing you know, like, everyone's saying it's a comeback story and now they're in the tournament and whatever. Like, committee member.
Cats corner, sitting down with any cats.
Right. And no committee member is going to leave them off if that happens. You know that. And so that's
going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's a storyline.
Like, wanted to check out the Oklahoma State game. You know, whatever game they have in the tournament.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're going to make the tournament just for that reason. But if they play like they did last night, they're not going to win a lot of games because they got crushed by Texas. Let us move on to preview this TCU game.
I don't have anything to say.
Yeah, I don't want to preview it. Actually, let's move on. Screw it. We're probably going to win. I feel real good about it. Do you feel real good about it?
It'd be interesting to see if Embiid plays.
That's the question.
I don't think he will.
Give me a prediction.
80-59.
I think we're going to score a whole bunch of points. I think we're going to score like 97 points. I think it's going to be some like crazy scoring game. That's my prediction. All right. Preview of Texas Tech. You can listen, obviously, to what we said with Brian earlier to get a good feel about them. But that could be an interesting game, Andrew. I think Texas Tech is playing better. Obviously, they have a couple of good wins on the season, Baylor and Oklahoma State. So the only thing I have to say about this is obviously come join us to watch it.
Yeah, they have a couple guys that you should watch out for. And they're the usual suspects, the guys that were good last year, Crockett and Tolbert,
right,
are their best players. Look out for them. But you know what? I think in the future, this Texas Tech team is going to be, you know, one to look out for with Tubby Smith there if he sticks around. So I think we'll win. It'd be a good, you know, away game. You know, it's always good to win away, but I think that y'all should come out and watch with us on Tuesday. at the Power and Light location. And I think we should see a Jayhawk victory.
I agree. This is a get right week with TCU and Tech. I think it would be very nice to get two blowout victories. I feel pretty good about it. I hope that it happens. If it doesn't happen, I think there's going to be a lot of people that are starting to get a little bit more concerned about this team's chances in the March into the postseason. But let's talk about our Johnny's gift card giveaway for this podcast. We have a $30 gift card, as always, we're going to give away. Andrew, what do you say we give it to somebody who goes on to our Facebook invite and writes on the wall?
Okay. So if you go, when are we going to give it away?
Well, I say, okay, so you got to write on the wall before the party, and we're going to give it away at the party. So you have to be there.
Okay. That's $30. That pays for your
entire meal.
Entire meal, whatever you're going to do. And you can want to buy me a beer with it, too.
30 tacos.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Okay, if someone wins this, please order 30 tacos. I will pay for the tax. So you're going to have 30 tacos, give the $30, and I will pay whatever excess it is.
Yeah. So come on out.
That being said, you got to eat the tacos.
Yeah.
Right, that's the deal here. That's so how it works. And if someone says, you know, goes into the Facebook group, which Kevin will post on Twitter.
It's on Twitter. Just look through my mention or look through my tweets. I've tweeted it every day.
Okay, go to that and click on you make a taco joke about how I'll eat 30 tacos. You'll probably win. Otherwise, we'll pick it at random. But if we see like a taco one, you're probably gonna get chosen.
Good chance. All right, cool. Well, anything else, Andrew, before we get out of here, other than
it's get right week, it's a get healthy week. Yes. Get healthy for me, for Joel Embiid. For this Kansas Jayhawks basketball team, I'm feeling better. Are you feeling better?
I think so. The defense still scares me a little bit, but I don't know. I'm more of a, I'm mean on my team. I want what's best for them.
Never fun to see a court storming, but
I think we will, and that's the thing. We got two good chances to get a little more confidence back. Hopefully, get some nice shooting days, get us back feeling good. So, thank you very much for listening. We have now gone over the hour and 15-minute mark. So, thanks so much if you made it this far. We encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Leave us a comment and rating on iTunes. It really helps us to get the podcast out to those who may not have heard it before. Certainly, we hope to see you next Tuesday, the 18th, at Johnny's Tavern in the PNL. We really appreciate you guys listening very much. Thank you so much. We'll catch you next time. But I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering, nine times get the cheering with them banners held high, and the crowd going wild, night before the final four, you can't even sleep now, yeah we at the peak now, we can't even leap down, March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now, if you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold
hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans.